Everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Scouting the League. We are recording this podcast on Monday, so we still got some results of the Steelers versus Bills game. Get bumped back if they can get the snow out of that stadium. We'll see how it ends up, as well as the Tampa versus Philly game. Man, Tampa probably has a player under center that Jimmy, our guest, will talk a little bit about today. But some great games yesterday. Cowboys chose not to show up last night versus Green Bay. And then there was a real nail biter in Detroit with more history from Puka Nacua. That offense, really a good game right down to the wire on that one. But before we jump into all things football, let me remind you, like, subscribe, share this podcast wherever you are listening. Continue to get the word out there. Of course, welcome back our co-host Neil Stratton of Inside the League. As always, you can find Neil at InsideTheLeague.com or on X at Inside the League. Nice and simple. Of course, I am your host, Roderick David. You can find me at RSAFootball.com or at RightStepADV on X. Neil, another week on the road for you. All-star games, everything been good, been productive, getting done what you need to get done?
Yeah, really, last week was a lot of fun. The Hula Bowl, really, I think it's their third or fourth year in Orlando. Not traveling across the Pacific anymore, but they're doing a really good job, and they do a good job of kind of capturing the island flavor. You know, they have the players learn the haka, and they've got a lot of different things related to it. But the football, obviously, is what you're there for, and the practices were really run well. We kind of bumped into the rain a little bit, as does happen in Florida in January. But I think they did a good job of overcoming it or working around it. Had to be 150 to 200 scouts there. The way they schedule practices lends itself to having more scouts because, unlike most All-Star games, their practices run concurrently for both teams. So they don't have two workouts, they have one, which means you got to, if you want to properly cover that game, you got to send 6-7 scouts out there. So they had a lot of guys kind of sharing the load on interviews and what have you. And but anyway, it was really well run. Good evening film sessions. Seemed like food was good. Accommodations, really good hotel. Really complimentary of the job they're doing down there. Next up is the Tropical Bowl. I'll be wheels up Wednesday afternoon, and I'll be there till Friday. And that's another great game. Michael Corte and his team run it, and they do a great job. That's in Orlando as well. I'm getting really familiar with Central Florida, I guess, this year. But it's a lot of fun, and I'm glad to be going. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. We'll do a full circle back on all the All-Star games at some point. I know, Neil, you and I will be down at the Senior Bowl together just a couple weeks here. But again, with the NFLPA game getting shut down, I'm excited to hear if this, you know, Tropical, CGS, Hula Bowl really stepped up and kind of captured some of that audience, all stuff we'll talk about. But enough of that about that. Really excited to introduce our guest for this week and next week. Again, he's going to have a ton of insight. Jimmy Noel, welcome. He's now working personnel department with the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Of course, spent time with the Browns, Chiefs after a playing career at Boston College. I'm very excited to get into it. Obviously, your football background goes much deeper than that. I will open it up to you. So, Jimmy, welcome to Scouting the League.
Yeah, thanks, Rod. I appreciate you guys, first and foremost, for having me on. It's a great opportunity just to kind of talk about football with you guys. Just a little bit about myself. Graduated from Boston College. Right after Boston College, I spent some time at Temple, about a year back in 14 as a volunteer football coach. And then I got the opportunity to do an internship with the Kansas City Chiefs back in 15. Took full opportunity of that, took advantage of it, and then ended up spending 3 years with the Kansas City Chiefs as a scouting intern, scouting assistant, and a pro scout. And then from there, I spent 3 years with the Cleveland Browns. I was super fortunate to do that, working alongside a bunch of great people in both Kansas City and Cleveland. Over in Cleveland, spent about a few months as the assistant director of pro scouting, before transitioning over to an area scout, the Northeast, for about 2.5 years. And then from there, I spent some time with the Army about a year back in 2022, all the way up until 2023 of May. And then now currently I'm working as a remote player personnel assistant with the Nebraska Cornhuskers. So.
Awesome. I know there's going to be lots we're going to get to talk about. Again, the Cornhuskers pulling in a pretty big name recruit through this most recent cycle, again, stealing him one from the Dogs. But we'll get into all of that next week. This week, we're really going to focus on the NFL time, the NFL side. Obviously, you know, you were with John Dorsey, both Kansas City, head over to Cleveland with him. Again, we talked about Baker Mayfield, obviously a number of draft class. Going to be some really unique things. Again, my time in Atlanta, very different, I'd imagine, from the way you ran, or, you know, ran things and saw things run in both Kansas City and Cleveland. Let's start with Cleveland. Tough loss. Again, another team that maybe you question whether they showed up to play, the quarterback, Joe Flacco. Let's start with your allegiances. Are you still pulling for Cleveland at all, or are you a little bit indifferent at this point the way the Browns do?
Well, I'm always going to pull for Cleveland. You know what I mean? Just being with that staff there for a little bit, as well as just seeing the city itself and how those fans are with the Browns. I mean, it's Cleveland Browns or nothing. And, yep. And that's it. You know what I mean? And obviously that's no shade to any other sports team in the city of Cleveland, but Cleveland football is that is the primary sport. And it's pretty cool just being in that moment when I was there, just realizing, hey, this is a football town and they want to see the Cleveland Browns succeed at any cost. And so I'm always going to pull for Cleveland no matter what. And this year, obviously, they were able to – they did pretty well this year now. They did pretty well.
Yeah, they did, I was – I got to spend some time in Cleveland, and it's a city that gets a bad rap. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I spent 2 years coaching at Case Western over there, and I mean, when you talk about football cities, that's exactly right. You said, again, LeBron and the Cavs, great. The Indians, Guardians now when they, you know, when they're good. But again, it's Browns. That's Browns country through and through.
Oh, yeah, it's Browns country through and through. And when I say this, I mean, when I say this is probably top two passionate fan bases that you'll see in the NFL, it's up there. It is up there in terms of how much this city loves their football.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of the players that are still on that roster, again, you helped bring in whatever capacity, again, on the pro side is, you know, with free agency, with working some cross checks, again, Northeast guys, or again, just being part of the draft room there. But let's kick it back a little bit. So were you with, did you come in under John Dorsey in Kansas City, spend time with him and then follow him over? Is that basically the way it worked out?
Yep. So that's exactly how it worked out. So once, obviously, the unfortunate news when John was like going to Kansas City, I followed him to Cleveland, and it was a great experience just working under John Dorsey. I mean, this, talk about a guy who is a teacher, who teaches, you know what I mean, and develops your craft. I mean, he does everything that he should as a general manager and more in order, and he'll give you all the resources in order for you to succeed.
Old school guy. Would you call John Dorsey an old school football guy?
Oh yeah, old school. But you know what? He's not completely old school. He knows how to blend in with the new school as well. You know what I mean? When it comes to relating with the players nowadays, I mean guys who are much younger than him. I think he has an idea, has a feel for relating to those guys, the players, everyone inside the building. As to what will make that thing go. So
good. Again, you always get a picture, at least myself, again, the old sweatshirt, right? He was a sweatshirt guy. Again, he's not a suit and tie guy. He's not a, I'm sure he could put one on. He probably had one or two he could dust off in the closet, but again, they're very much that old school. And I'm sure that was, again, coming from Kansas City, into Cleveland, where again, Cleveland over the years, there have been some major swings towards an analytic approach. Some really smart guys understand the numbers, really lean into that. Talk to me about how John both kind of dealt with that again, you and I have talked again, the film is what tells the story, but again, mm-hmm. the numbers can help steer it to what you need to look at. So talk to me about kind of how you going from Kansas City to Cleveland, how you used that and how again, the kind of the two approaches butted heads or worked really well together.
Yeah, so obviously John being an old school guy, just relying on the tape, obviously growing up with the Packers and his mentor and his old boss, Ron Wolf, Hall of Famer, you know what I mean? So that's what he was accustomed to, and then bring that philosophy over to Kansas City And now you're heading over to the Cleveland Browns, where it's a little bit different approach from what you're used to. And so John did, I thought he did a good job in terms of integrating the analytics into the scouting portion with Paul DePodesta and Kevin Kovash and Andrew Healy and those guys, you know what I mean? And trying to make each part of the scouting world, whether it's old school or the analytics, making sure that it meshes and make sure that we get the best players available and where we see their value for the Cleveland Browns.
Good. Just another piece along the puzzle, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Jimmy, give me your take on Elliott Wolf. I mean, I think he's a guy who certainly will get consideration in New England. I think there are a lot of people that are kind of championing him. I respected him for a long time. You obviously got to work with him in Cleveland. What was your take on him? Good, bad? What does he do well? What does he not do well, maybe? Where does he need to develop? I mean, give me your kind of overall on Elliott.
So on Elliott Wolf, I'll say this. I mean, if he gets the GM job over in New England, I will say it is a long time coming just because this guy is smart. I mean, obviously, he's grown up around football with his dad being the Hall of Famer, Ron Wolf. So you feel like he is positioned and he's got all the traits in order to be a really good general manager in this league. It's just more so about the timing, which we all understand. But once I think Ellie gets his opportunity, he's going to run with it and he's going to do a great job. And then if it is Elliott, I mean, I have no worries, no reservations about what he can do and bring the New England Patriots back to prominence.
Mm-hmm. Now, another question, Jimmy, having worked with Dorsey, here's a guy who's had two successful runs as a GM.
Mm-hmm.
He's with a successful franchise right now. He came from a successful franchise. Does he get another shot as a GM?
You never know. You never know. Obviously, there's always that thing where owners might not like to retread. But, I mean, John Dorsey's resume speaks for itself. I mean, he's drafted how many – I mean, now obviously they're still playing, but you've got a few Hall of Famers now who are currently still playing in Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, possibly Chris Jones, you know what I mean, and a bunch of All-Pros, and then just a bunch of guys who have produced at really young stages of their careers, like the Marcus Peters, the Kareem Hunts, and that kind of thing. When he drafted those guys and Baker Mayfield, Denzel Ward, Nick Chubb, especially, you know what I mean. So just him having that keen eye for scouting and evaluating talent, I mean, it's nothing like I've ever seen. And to be honest, I mean, I don't think there's going to be a lot of GMs out there who could probably do the things that he can do in terms of evaluating talent. I mean, it shows on paper everywhere that he's gone, whether it's the Green Bay Packers, Kansas City Chiefs, Cleveland Browns, especially now with the Detroit Lions. I mean, if you've seen their last three draft classes with Brian Branch and Sam Laporta and Jahmyr Gibbs and Aiden Hutchinson and those guys and Kirby Joseph, I mean, he was there when he drafted all those guys. So, I mean, it's a collaborative effort. But it just goes to show what this guy can bring to your organization.
Yeah, no, you're right. Those are all big hits for the Lions, and it is collaborative, but he's got his fingerprints on a lot of good players. One last question, Roderick, if you don't mind. Why hasn't Alonzo High? I think a lot of people know that I'm a pretty big champion of Alonzo Highsmith. I think he's got one of the keener scouting eyes in football today. Why do you think he hasn't gotten a crack at a GM job yet?
You know, I can't really say. I mean, I'm hoping Alonzo gets an opportunity to get a GM job, but I mean, there are so many qualified guys out there in the scouting world who deserve opportunities. So there's only 32 jobs, you know what I mean? So it's tough getting into that role, especially an interview as an African-American also. I mean, just to get an opportunity, just an interview for a GM job, but I mean, like I say, it's 32 jobs and there are hundreds of potential candidates for that job. So a lot of times you're going to get skipped over. So, but in terms of what Alonzo brings to an organization as well, I mean, he's got some of the best eyes I've seen in terms of value and talent. And that goes back to the Green Bay mold in terms of how Ron Wolf has developed those guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No doubt. Well, maybe it's just a timing thing as it is with Elliott. We'll see.
Oh, absolutely.
Certainly. So, Jimmy, I want to run back to again, talk a little bit of John Dorsey. Obviously, you were with him in Kansas City. You go to Cleveland with him. One thing that, again, from a scout in the business, I was with the Falcons. There were guys that we knew John Dorsey was going to draft that we had off our board, shall we say, for character concerns. Again, Neil and I talked about it a number of weeks ago, and it is a major part of what you did as a Northeast scout, what you guys do, any area scout, national scout, your college scouts are doing a ton of character work. I would also say that he has had a great success keeping those guys on the field. Again, Tyreek Hill, you don't have to Google his name and search very far to find what his past was. Again, your Kareem Hunts, you can go through. Again, Baker Mayfield wasn't spotless. You go through his list of guys that he has been willing to bring in, and there are a lot of guys that, again, to the average fan or, maybe the guy that's sitting in church on Sunday just isn't real comfortable with being on his team. But again, you want to win so you can live with it. What was it about, Dorsey and his program, his franchises, his organizations that allowed him to both bring them in and keep them on the field?
So one thing about Dorsey is one of his best traits is his ability to say, forgive people, giving people second chances, just because as humans, we're all going to make mistakes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when John Dorsey brought these guys in who had the character issues, he would speak to them. He would speak to them himself. And so at that point, he would get an understanding of those guys, just having them talk through the situation and just getting a feel for that guy. And there were a lot of times where he felt good about a guy, you know what I mean? Like guys like Tyreek Hill, when we brought him in for a 30-player visit. And so I spent some time with Tyreek. I mean, I took him for his physical and got to spend time with him, talk to him. And so you could tell, like, Tyreek Hill, when we first brought him in, it was like a kid in the candy shop. It was like he was just enamored with the whole process. Realistically, he's just a big kid at heart, you know what I mean? And so you could tell there was some remorse from that situation. But when you really got to talk to him and when he opened up, you could tell that this kid's a really good kid who just made one bad decision. And John obviously felt comfortable with that. And then the kid's been clean ever since. But John's biggest thing is that he's about giving people second chances. Just because when people get second chances, especially in the profession that we're in, those chances don't come around too often. And so once those guys get another chance, they're going to make the most of it. And John really puts his eggs and puts his entire life online for those guys, just because they know they can make that change and help the organization from a playing perspective, as well as helping out in the community, showing awareness, that kind of thing. So,
did y'all make any special accommodations for Hill, given that he may be a guy that kind of need to stay on track? Did you have someone maybe in the locker room that you said, hey, listen, you need to take Tyreek under his wing? Did you do anything maybe with the coaches or any other kind of things that made it a little different because of the situation and his character background?
No, I mean, Tyreek was a guy who was responsible to do everything on his own. And I think Tyreek knew that. As far as the extra accommodations, I wasn't too aware of that in terms of if Tyreek needed some extra support. But John's one of those guys who trusts people outside of the building. You know what I mean? In order for you to grow, you have to learn on your own. And obviously, there's going to be a lot of resources there. If you need to talk with someone, if you need the resources in the building, we're going to provide that to you. But as far as the resources in terms of making sure that Tyreek stayed on track, I mean, I think the organization did a good job with that, especially with Andy Reid also. Andy Reid is a guy who trusts his guys, I mean, a lot. I mean, normally you hear teams who practice a little bit during the bye week. I mean, Andy Reid gives those guys the full week off to go do their own thing. You know what I mean? And that's because he trusts those guys to do the right thing. You know what I mean? So, and that's what you had to appreciate from Andy Reid and John Dorsey in terms of letting those guys be themselves, knowing that those guys are going to do the right thing outside the building.
Yeah. definitely big personalities and leaders. Yeah, it's one of those aspects of for both those guys to put the faith in them. You're going to be playing on Sunday. You're going to help iconic franchises be really good. Again, that vote of confidence obviously has lent itself with a bunch of really good players that, again, sitting there in Atlanta, the number of players where, whether it was the owner, whether it was the GM, whether it was the coaching staff, we didn't have on our board. We said, this guy is not going to be able to come here and play. And again, knowing that they are very good players, but again, whatever it was about maybe individual profiles, again, not every one of those players, but again, there was just some guys where it was, hey, we're just not comfortable with him being here. And then we turn around and see him playing on Sundays for, again, the Chiefs were a common one. The Browns, of course, again, there's teams across the league that are a little more comfortable with him. You know, Pete Carroll in Seattle has taken some of those guys on. Dallas is another one of those franchises, does a good job with them. Some franchises have been more successful with those types of players, and some, like the Falcons, I would say have really struggled with those guys. And, you know, I would say as a result, some of those guys end up staying off the board. But it's a really, again, it was always one of those things tied to John Dorsey. And again, you can see maybe even in Detroit now with a guy like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, again, going up there, and obviously he's got, you know, even on the football field, he's got a little extra fire to him, but maybe John's the guy that's talking to him, you know, during the week and making sure he takes his mask off at the appropriate time and, you know, not sending him out to the whole team and everything like that. But let's talk a little bit about Baker Mayfield. Was he part of your first draft class there in Cleveland?
Yep. So he was the first draft class once I got to Cleveland.
Good. What, again, going back to that time, again, no, it's no secret that Cleveland's been looking for a franchise quarterback for a few years now. Again, maybe is it Deshaun Watson at this point? You know, time will tell, I guess, on that one. He's got a pretty big contract that's going to say he's at least going to be there and have a chance next year. But again, you've got a bunch of quarterbacks. You go through the Manziel situation. Now you got Baker Mayfield. What was it that you liked about Baker Mayfield? Obviously a good player, but, you know, give us some insight into the draft room and process leading up to making him the number one overall.
Baker was a good prospect. I mean, they're all good prospects. And from that 18 class, you had Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Josh Rosen. So we really had our pick from the litter in terms of who to make the number one pick. As far as for me, just watching all those guys when we'd be in the draft meeting room, watching the quarterbacks. I mean, Baker is the one that stuck out with his accuracy, his arm strength, his ability to maneuver in the pocket, his pocket presence, his ability to get outside the pocket, extend plays. And so those were things that really intrigued me about Baker, and with him being probably the more accurate quarterbacks in the last couple of years, it just solidified it for me in terms of him being the guy number one. Now everyone feels differently when it comes to quarterback position and what they're looking for. You know what I mean? So the quarterback position is a position you've got to hit on because that could alter the trajectory of your program, your organization for the next 15 to 20 years. You know what I mean? So that is something that you need to get right. And I think we felt pretty confident about Baker Mayfield in terms of the character stuff. I know there was some character in terms of what Baker did outside of the football field, you know what I mean? Or on the football field. And to be honest, that didn't bother us too much when I was with the Browns. That just shows his competitive spirit. You know what I mean? This guy's going to fight. He's a lunch pill kind of guy, hard hat lunch pill kind of guy. He's going to come in and work every day. He's going to get the respect of the locker room. No matter what he does, he's going to put everything he's got into this game. And that's what resonated with us as well. Just his commitment to play the game of football and loving it, along with his ability to play the game.
Jimmy, you alluded to the fact there are so many quarterbacks in that draft class and look like y'all are pretty focused on the position with the number one pick. I remember tracking the mock drafts, and for what it's worth, they didn't really figure it out that it was going to be Baker until literally maybe 72 hours before the pick was made. When did y'all kind of decide that it was going to be Baker?
To be honest, we didn't know until a couple of minutes before the draft. Really? Now, Yep, and now that's just for us, a couple of us. Others, they knew well in advance, in terms of who they think was going to be the number one pick. But a couple of us, I mean, it was a sort of thing where it's like, well, we don't know where we're going to go. You have an idea, but not completely. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, you want to make sure you get the quarterback position right. And obviously, you never want to give any intel to the press or to other teams in terms of where you're going to go. So you try to keep that pretty quiet. So for some of us, it wasn't until the day leading up to the draft where we didn't know or who we were going to take at the number one pick. But I always had an intuition that was going to be Baker just because of Baker's ability to play the game of football.
Now, Jimmy, I know that you weren't necessarily part of the brain trust per se, but if Baker had gotten hit by a bus the day before the draft, who do you think is the guy that y'all would have gone with at that point?
It honestly probably would have been Josh Allen. Just because Josh Allen, I mean, 6'6", I mean, 250 pounds. I mean, Josh Allen, I remember when I was in Kansas City and making up some cut-up tapes from the previous class, from the 17 class. And I remember watching the kid out of San Diego State playing Wyoming. And Josh, that was the first time I was ever exposed to Josh Allen. And his arm talent just, it popped off film. You know what I'm saying? In terms of his release, arm strength, his mobility, that kind of thing. So I kind of watched him a little bit more. So I kind of just dropped doing what I was doing at that moment in time, watched Josh Allen a little bit more. I said, if this guy comes out, he's going to be a top 15 pick in the 17 draft class. Now, obviously, the kid didn't come out. Came out the next year. And I said, you know what, maybe another year of development does some kids some good. But this guy is special with the ball in his hands, and he's able to make a lot of plays off script. And so Josh Allen would have been the number two guy for us in terms of his arm strength, his mobility, his size, his ability just to play in the cold weather, just because when you're playing up in Cleveland, you've got to be able to maneuver and be able to adjust in the cold weather games. And so Josh Allen probably would have been the number two guy for us if something had happened to Baker. Now, fortunately enough, nothing happened to Baker, so we're still able to pick him at number one. So, but yeah, it was a close one between both of them. So,
now the big knock on Josh going into the draft was the accuracy. Mm-hmm. Did y'all discount that? Did you feel like his accuracy was fine, or did you feel like it was something that y'all could probably fix at some point along the way?
I mean, you never really know in terms of the accuracy portion per se. I mean, there have been guys in the league who have had accuracy issues and have grown from them. And there are some who have always struggled with them, even once they got to the league. So I thought we had a good coaching staff in place in terms of if we were to pick Josh Allen, that could help out with his accuracy and just kind of do a lot of things that could tailor to Josh Allen's ability. With his mobility, with his arm strength, that kind of thing. So regardless, whatever happened, whether it was Baker or Josh Allen, I thought we would have had a pretty good plan in place for them to both succeed.
You hit on a perfect scouting nugget right there. Again, one of those really fun things that ends up being at the college level where you're watching some other prospect or kind of running through whatever, and all of a sudden some other guy's like, wait, who is this? Like, you know, the ball, again, ball comes out different. You see a wide receiver all of a sudden just burning people. Safeties playing from deep middle. Those are really fun players where all of a sudden it's like, man, I just got to look this guy up. You pause what you're doing. Again, when the ball starts coming, you know, out of Josh Allen's hand, again, it's just different. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you start elevating yourself that way, again, it becomes a lot of fun. So with Baker, Baker Mayfield has been a good NFL quarterback. Again, everybody sitting out there can decide if he's been a number one overall quarterback. Again, obviously the Browns chose to move on, but he's sitting here. He's got a playoff game. Baker Mayfield is a starting NFL quarterback, I would say clearly at this point. Is he a guy that elevates a team, or is he a guy that is going to do whatever an offensive coordinator asks him to do?
I think Baker would elevate the guys around him. Now, will it be with the playing style in terms of his athletic ability? who knows? You know what I mean? But in terms of what he's done with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year, it's been great to see in terms of getting the ball downfield. And I know he's been battling some injuries later on the year, towards the end of the year this year. But in terms of Baker getting out on time to Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, those guys, I thought he's done a good job of that. And then just kind of rallying those guys when things get bad. You know what I'm saying? So I know a lot of people will say the on-the-field stuff is the most important thing, but you also have to make sure that you've got command of the locker room as well, making sure that those guys can rally behind you. And I thought that Baker has always had a knack for doing that, rallying those guys and motivating those guys when things got hard. So I think Baker is the type of guy who can that is a guy that you can live with. He can help an organization in all different areas, not just the on the field play.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get a great chance to see him again. Kenny is the division champs. They get a home game, and we'll see if they can get it done this week against was the Eagles, correct? Again, the team that's limping a little bit into the playoffs here, and have a chance to begin be that underdog division champ at home, and see where everything goes. On the personnel side, I want to hit on, obviously you went through a couple coaches there in Cleveland as well. Again, finished up Greg Williams, interim tag, Freddie Kitchens, I believe, for 1 year before getting Coach Stefanski, who is now still there. Obviously, who your head coach is dictates your personnel, dictates what your team is going to look like, what your roster looks like. From a personnel side, again, how did you guys as a staff deal with that? And again, the ups and the downs and the hard things that you guys dealt with.
And so in terms of the staff, I mean, every coach has their preference in terms of what they like. Now, whether you've got an offensive head coach or a defensive head coach, they'll kind of let you know what they want. When I was there, we had most of them being offensive head coaches. And so all three of them having different philosophies in a way. The most recent being Kevin Stefanski. Kevin Stefanski kind of grew up in that Minnesota two tight end zone scheme type of deal. So we were looking for more of the more athletic linemen, where you got guys like Nick Harris out of Washington and Jedrick Wills out of Alabama. You know what I'm saying? Guys who can really move. And then there are guys who are just instant starters, instant plug and play starters, like Joel Bitonio, Kevin Zeitler, and that kind of stuff. So every coach is going to be different in terms of what they want. Your job as a scout in the scouting department is to make sure that the coaches get what they need in order to be successful, especially as an organization. And so you're always going to go out. I mean, say if, let's, for example, going back to Kevin Stefanski's offense and being a wide zone, so you're looking for more athletic linemen, guys with receivers who can block. When you're a college scout, you're going to go out to the schools. You're going to say, hey, listen, can this guy fit in our scheme? You know what I'm saying? Or the quarterback position, can this guy get out of the pocket in terms of extended plays? Is this guy cerebral enough to make checks at the line of scrimmage in terms of what Kevin Stefanski wants, ID the mic, that kind of stuff? So it's the same deal every year, but it's just different philosophies from coaches.
Yeah, you end up scouting again. You're always scouting generally the same things. Does it become just a preference? Hey, which ones are the priorities? Again, a high IQ guy, again, coming from the outside zone. Again, we can live with a 300-pound guard and 300-pound tackle. They just better be able to sprint outside zone and, cut somebody off and open up holes. Is it really more priority change as opposed to traits changing?
It goes hand in hand. It goes hand in hand, I think. I mean, I know that's the on the fence answer, but I mean, it really depends. If you got a really good player who may not necessarily fit this game, you've got to find a way to play him regardless. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So I think it goes to what works for the offensive scheme or defensive scheme. So like I said, it goes hand in hand in terms of what the coaches want. I mean, priority over necessarily the great athletes.
Yeah, again, you get your first round, second round, really third round guys where, again, they're going to be able to play in most schemes. So you want to plug them in and you just, again, find them the right spot. Anything after that, again, that's where you can find your, you know, quote unquote scheme fits where, again, your outside zone or your stretch zone, your vertical threats, maybe they're not a fit in everybody. Again, you're talking, you know, two good tight ends in Harrison Bryant and David Njoku, again, priority guys in a Stefanski offense. So maybe they're going to get elevated a little bit in terms of that draft day or free agency value. But again, good players are going to play. And then anything beyond that, you just better find guys that that fit what you want to do as an offense, defense, or on special teams.
Absolutely.
I got to ask one more question while we're on schemes. It's always intrigued me that Josh Rosen went into that draft as certainly one of the top quarterbacks in that draft. Yet he kind of got stuck. You know, he went into Arizona, didn't have a lot of instant success. And then there's a head coaching change, a major scheme change. Kyler Murray comes in pretty soon. Allen's gone. He resurfaces, I think, in Miami. Didn't get much of a run there. And I think maybe San Francisco, and maybe I may be leaving out a team. Do you feel like Rosen's failure was more due to kind of circumstances beyond his control, or do you think he should have been able to adapt and maybe his talent should have shown through at some point? Jimmy, what's your take on that?
You know what? I mean, I have been with those organizations who have brought him in, so I can't really say in terms of how he was with the playbook and just kind of adapting to their schemes and their playbook philosophy. I thought he was a good player coming out of college. I mean, he was super cerebral in terms of dissecting defenses with his brain, making the necessary checks at the line of scrimmage. And so, like I said, it was a tough deal for Josh Allen. I mean, obviously being a top 10 pick in the 18 draft and for him not having the success that he's wanted going from team to team. But the quarterbacks, it's a tough position, man. It's a tough position. You got a couple years to show what you can do. If you can't show what you can do in those couple of years, it's kind of your push to the side. And we're going to now the teams are bringing in this new crop of quarterbacks and they're going to show what they can do. You know what I mean? So from the quarterback position, you've got to make sure that you make the most of your opportunities and show what you can do. So
you're right. It seems like the window is tighter every year as far as the chance you get and the amount of rope you get.
Absolutely.
Yep. The time to build your franchise or your college program has gotten shorter and shorter. You know, Neil, last week we were on talking to Russ about some of these coaches. It's basically seemed like as soon as we got off, not only had the coaches that had been fired, you know, kind of getting wrapped up, but all of a sudden Nick Saban retires. Kalen DeBoer is now at Bama. Pete Carroll retires or, you know, is moved up into the front office role. Again, you talk about however that goes. A different Jimmy had a really good number of days with Sarkisian, Norvell, Lanning, all getting big contracts extensions. Do we all think Kalen DeBoer is going to be a good fit at Alabama?
You know, that remains to be seen. I mean, he's had a lot of success. I seen the other day, I mean, he had an absurd record. I think it was like 105-12 or something like that. You know what I mean? I mean, he's got winning traits. I mean, his philosophy works in terms of winning games and having his players buy into what he's bringing them. You know what I mean? And so obviously Alabama has all the resources, has all the recruits and that kind of thing. So I don't see why he can't be successful at Alabama with the philosophy that he's bringing. I just saw that he's bringing his OC over to Alabama, so that's going to be a huge plus for the offense there. I mean, they've already had talent along with the quarterback that they had there. But I mean, it obviously remains to be seen. Just when you think that you got it good, you're going to go through some trials and tribulations early on in the career, trying to gain the respect of the players and such. But I mean, I think Kalen's got all the ingredients to have a successful program.
You know, it's fascinating. You alluded to. What's his record, Jimmy? Do you remember? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was like 105-12.
Yeah. I mean, it is remarkable the amount of success the dude has had. And you'd like to think that that'll translate almost anywhere, but you know, we'll see. It's, I wonder if he'll get dragged down by the culture change that we've seen. You know, we saw that at Mississippi State. We've seen it in different places, and it's kind of stupid and weird that that would even be part of the mix. But sometimes the SEC can be very stupid and weird. But the one thing I think he's got going for him is he may not have the relationships in Alabama yet. And I don't know, I haven't seen how he's populated his staff yet, but I do think it's smart that when you've got a guy who's seems to be an elite offensive mind, then you, to have him in the head coaching role, you're going to have a carousel of coaches kind of going through there and what have you. But when you've got the guy at the top who really seems to understand how to score points and really be successful there, I think you're off to a good start. You know, we've seen, we even saw Saban kind of cycle through offensive coordinators and really get a bit more progressive in his offensive style. We may have to see a bit of an arc for DeBoer on the defensive side. I mean, I would say that's certainly not where the Huskies hung their hat per se this past year, but maybe if they can score enough points, they can kind of figure that out as they go along. You certainly have an opportunity in Alabama, given the way where the program is and where Saban leaves it, that they will be certainly given a major chance to have success. I'm really interested to see what Jalen Milroe looks like, and he's a guy that Roderick have spoken spoke about previously on this podcast. But how he changes game, and maybe what DeBoer does with him. I mean, I don't see him. He's certainly a very different player from Michael Penix, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And so I'm really eager to see kind of what happens and kind of track everything that goes on in Tuscaloosa.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jimmy. Jalen hit the transfer portal, didn't he?
Yeah, I just.
Oh, has he? Okay, I didn't even know that. Yes. I'm running behind.
Yeah, no, well, it's one of those. It's an interesting one, Neil, because, again, I believe Will Rogers jumped back into the portal. Everybody's connecting him. But does Kalen make the phone call, or maybe, again, has he already? Is Jalen a guy that he sees in his system? Again, if not, then yeah, stay in the portal, go find success. Again, there's going to be a lot of teams lined up for him. But again, does Coach DeBoer, does he call Jalen, say, hey, I see a future. This is what I did. Again, this is what I did with Michael Penix, who, again, we sat and talked. We think Penix is going to be a top 10 draft pick. You know, Jimmy may agree or disagree on that. But again, he's now shown that a quarterback that, again, you know, for the good that Penix had at Indiana, there was a lot of bad too. And so, again, there is a track record for Kalen to do that with Jalen and kind of see where it shakes out. I would guess right now he's in the portal. That's probably a reason. But again, he's going to go somewhere and have a good chance to do something and kind of see where it all shakes out.
Well, I'm kind of I don't know what the truth is. I'm looking on here and it says that was a troll and that he's saying that he is sticking around. So I don't know what's true and what's not. It's kind of hard to know who
exactly.
To believe.
Exactly. Well, we'll find out again between, you know, this time, next time, and, you know, anytime between, we'll see where he ends up. But again, it becomes, as we've seen with all these coaching moves, we've seen the Alabama to Texas pipeline kind of get going with Sark. It's some free agency in a lot of ways. And again, more of that stuff we'll jump into next time. But, you know, some of these other coaching situations, again, Cleveland finally feels like Stefanski's the guy. Jimmy, would you agree Stefanski's going to have multiple chances now with how good this team has looked the last couple of years to keep building and get this team over the hump?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Stefanski's the guy. I mean, his play calling ability, I mean, his creativeness, you know what I'm saying? He was able to get David and Joku involved more down the line, even with the injuries to the receiving core, guys like Amari Cooper, you know what I mean? And especially the quarterback position, in terms of what Joe Flacco did towards the end of the season. I mean, it's just absolutely remarkable. So just finding different ways to get guys involved and with their talents. I mean, Kevin Stefanski's got to be the guy, coupled with Jim Schwartz. I mean, from having the number one defense in the NFL, you know what I mean? I mean, you're not going to lose a lot of games when your defense is playing like that.
Yeah. Again, Jim Schwartz, a big name in the system right now that is going to get and should be getting head coaching hires. But for Stefanski to keep him would be huge. What was that, Neil?
Jimmy, in your opinion, and if you answer this question, you can make a whole lot more money than sitting on a stupid podcast with us. Is there anything that a Kevin Stefanski can do or say or coach Deshaun Watson to recapture what they paid for, what they committed to, and that we have not seen yet in Cleveland? I mean, is there any way to unlock the code on him, or do you think that this is a situation that's already lost?
You know what? You gave up 3 first-round picks and gave him a bunch of money for a reason. You know what I mean? Like, you're hoping he gets back to the Deshaun Watson of 2018, 2017. And I think Deshaun can get back there. I mean, I think it's going to be Kevin Stefanski's job, just making sure you're bringing him along, making sure that he's up to date in terms of what you're trying to do offensively, and just instilling the confidence. That's the first and foremost thing in terms of instilling the confidence, reminding him, hey, listen, I know what you could do with your first 3 years in the league. I mean, you were an absolute stud, top 5 quarterback as a young guy. And I know that you still have that within you. Now, he's been hampered with injuries, and his season this year, he was sidelined the rest of the year with the shoulder injury, if I'm not mistaken. But in terms of the athletic ability, I mean, I think he still got it. It's just making sure that he still has that confidence in terms of he can still play this game at a high level.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. So the Browns have a defensive coordinator that they need to keep. The Dallas Cowboys didn't show up, and their defensive coordinator now 2 or 3 years has been connected with a bunch of jobs. There's also all of a sudden a, you know, Legion of Boom that needs a head coach. Do we think Dan Quinn is ready to head to Seattle? Where do we go on that?
You know what? I would honestly like to see Dan Quinn back in Seattle. You know what I mean? Where he started his rise to fame in a way with the Legion of Boom. It would be good, and he would be familiar with the area, with the owners, in terms of what they're trying to put in place, and he'd also be familiar with the GM and John Snyder. You know what I mean? So they would almost be in lockstep, just because they've got years of relationship together. And so, I mean, I think it would be the most ideal spot for him to go back to Seattle. But obviously, you know how this head coach hiring cycle can be. I mean, it could be a lot of unpredictability. So, whatever team gets Dan Quinn, I mean, I think they're going to be super fortunate. I mean, I thought Dan Quinn did a good job down in Atlanta when he was there, especially taking him to a Super Bowl and with Matt Ryan's MVP year. So and having one of the top 5 defenses in the NFL for a couple of years. So I think wherever he goes, he's going to have success. And I know guys are going to buy into what he's bringing.
Maybe he can bring Mike McCarthy as his OC. I mean, McCarthy may be available very soon, you know?
Yeah.
Roger, let me give you my 2 cents. I think Quinn would be great on the defensive side, obviously, but I don't think Geno's there, and he's not your long-term solution. So
right,
if you're going to bring in Dan Quinn, you just need to make sure that you're confident that whoever brings in to kind of run the offense is the guy and the right one to kind of make things happen there. And there are a lot of bright offensive minds out there right now. Obviously Ben Johnson, Bobby Slowick, what have you, but are those guys going to want to make lateral moves? You know, that's, I think that's the thing you got to consider if you're Seattle, because again, I just think it's smart the way the rules are now to have an offensive guy at the top, because you got to have someone who's creative and knows what he's doing. And especially if you have success, someone that can, you know, if someone goes, you can kind of move the next guy up, but you know that the guy at the top is solid and really commit, have all the answers for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Q, it's amazing. Q has evolved. Again, it was almost frustrating. Hey, cover 3, we're going to rush and we're going to do Legion of Boom. Again, that's what we had. That's what he had there in Seattle. It's what he did in Atlanta. Obviously, he has greatly evolved with that defense in Dallas. But again, the general rule is you got 2 chances, right? 2 chances as GM, 2 chances as head coach. It's hard to imagine, you know, Jimmy, to your point, a better situation for him to step into for his, you know, maybe second and final chance to run the show as a head coach. So, and, you know, let's run it back again. You talk about, you know, Mike McCarthy. Again, you've got an owner in Jerry Jones, who is also the GM and is, you know, as involved as anybody. Obviously he's got Steven there, but again, this is Jerry Jones's team. Do we think Mike McCarthy lasts the day, the week? Do we see him as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys next year?
Oh man. That is a tough question. Just because, I mean, you're coming off what, 3 years of going 12-5, you know what I mean? And your organization would be enthused about that. But now when you get bounced out of the first round of the playoffs, the last couple of years.
In an ugly fashion last night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
But you got
to give credit to the Green Bay Packers and Jordan Love. Jordan Love is playing out of his mind right now. And just to kind of go back, just kind of get off topic a little bit. But so Green Bay has found their quarterback of the future. Just when you thought, right? Yeah, but in terms of the Mike McCarthy deal, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, just because I know Jerry Jones has high expectations for the team year in and year out, and their ultimate goal is to win a Super Bowl. So if you feel that Mike McCarthy isn't the guy at the helm, then I expect he'd make it pretty quickly. But it's just tough to say. So I would probably say he's out after this last night's performance, but you never know.
I think that Jerry Jones kind of surveys the field for another 48 hours. And I mean, there's some attractive coaches out there right there on the market. And I think he's just trying to make sure he's got a backup plan for when he does make this change. But I would be very surprised if he's on the sideline for the Cowboys in the 2024 season.
Yeah.
I think the interesting one for me is you look at the Dallas Cowboys, a non-traditional front office, right? So your head coach doesn't answer to a GM. He answers to the owner. Mm-hmm. There's one coach on the market who would probably fit pretty well in that position. He's going to make all his roster decisions. He is going to be the guy. Again, there's already lots of reports out there connecting them, but again, if Bill Belichick has not had a conversation with Jerry Jones yet, I would be surprised. Again, I think Neil, to your point, it's one of those ones. I think Jerry's already made the call, probably, you know, seeing how warm the water is. If he's making this move on McCarthy, he's already got his guy in the bag. And again, Jerry's smart enough to know that that's the way he's got to go about it. Unless he decides he's already, again, had the conversation with DQ, or there's a guy named Mike Vrabel who, again, all of a sudden, maybe you fall in love with him. But again, Belichick to Dallas. Again, I think, Texas would certainly celebrate that one. Even though their other football team, the Texans, looked really, really good this last week. Again, you've got a couple of good football teams there now. So coaching changes are happening, we'll just continue to see where it shakes out. Obviously, Atlanta's looking, Carolina's looking, they're looking, Washington got their guy. It sounds like Peters, I believe, out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So again, some names starting to fall into place, but again, with the playoffs the way they are, with the restrictions the NFL currently has on interviews and everything, we're not close to the finish line yet, but some names are going to continue to fall off the board, and as these programs take shape, again, unfortunately, there will be good coaches, good scouts, good people in the buildings that are let go, and we'll keep an eye and ear on for those. What are you looking forward this week? Obviously, we got a couple games tonight, college, NFL, more playoff games. What are you guys looking forward to?
I like the idea that we've got a playoff game in 2.5 hours or 1.5 hours, whatever it is. That's kind of neat. You don't see that on a Monday afternoon very often, I guess, because it's a holiday. That's a little more appropriate. But yeah, I think I hate it that two teams are going to have a short week, but very selfishly, as someone who's got some time to watch some football and wants to, it's great for me. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to touching down in Orlando for the Tropical Bowl as well. And it's just kind of fun. It's easy for me because I'm not the one losing a job or anything, but it's kind of fun to see how the carousel spins on the college and pro level. So it's an exciting time of the year. And last but not least, there's still a few bigger players out there, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison Jr., that haven't signed with agencies yet. And as someone who tracks the industry, that's kind of interesting too. So, I mean, it's a great time of the year. It's a great time to be a football fan.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit that right on the head. There's going to be a lot of moving parts, whether it's going to be college or the NFL, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just excited to see what happens and the trickle down effect. If one person leaves this place, just like say like Jed Fish leaves for Washington, now who's going to be the head coach at Arizona? You know what I'm saying? And just watching more football, exciting football. I mean, you've got the Bills and the Steelers tonight, which is going to be a great game, especially with those fans trying to find their seats. If you guys haven't seen the videos of that, you know what I mean. So and so the thing, another thing is just seeing how Philadelphia responds. I mean, with them losing 5 out of 6 games and the Buccaneers just getting into the playoffs. So I feel like that's going to be a pretty good matchup, a sneaky matchup tonight. And so as long as you can get more football, I'm good with that. I am good with that.
More football is always good. No question. No question about that. Before we sign off here, let me remind you, go check out agentlive360.com. If you are a sports agent, keeping track of your clients, every rep you know, every contract you have, make sure you are using Agent Live 360. Head to agentlive360.com, request a demo. I will personally jump on, walk you through the whole thing. Perhaps we can talk some football as well. That is Agent Live 360. Prices just dropped. Go check them out. Next week, we get Jimmy back. We are going to talk more on the college side. Again, he was part of, maybe we'll just give him credit for Dylan Raiola heading to Nebraska. Obviously, one of the big names in this, if you want to call it NIL, transfer portal, free agency, recruiting, whatever you want to call it. Again, he's going to have the Cornhusker and on his helmet. Fantastic for Nebraska, one of the great cities in all of college football. Again, a really special place. So, again, we'll talk about what the college landscape really looks like. What do people not know? What are the misperceptions? And I think we'll probably hit on some Ohio State, because for all the bad that Ryan Day got after the year, they got a bunch of NFL dudes coming back there. Again, JT Teomolau. They got the running back. They've got Emeka Egbuga. They've got Donovan Jackson. So, again, how does Jimmy think Ohio State managed to pull that off, and just kind of all things college football? Again, I'm excited for NFL games. I'm excited for the movement. I'm excited. Always a really good, fun time for me to check in with all my scouts that I know across the league, connect with them and just stay involved in the football game. I love it. But that's what we got for today. Jimmy, thanks for being on. Neil, as always, as you hit the road, stay safe. Enjoy football. Make sure, again, Jimmy, are you on Twitter or X or anywhere? If people have questions for you, where can they hit you?
Yep. So they can find me on X at JNoel, N-O-E-L 423.
Perfect. That's on X. Of course, Neil is at Inside the League and I am at Right Step ADV. Check us out. Hit us your questions. If you have any college questions, drop them in there. We'll get them answered next week. But enjoy football. Enjoy what you're doing and keep on scouting.